You're listening to Free Speech Radio News for Thursday, November 22nd. I'm Antonio Ortiz from KPFA in Berkeley. Today, you will hear a documentary about Portland, Oregon's Dignity Village. Dignity Village in Portland, Oregon, is the only government-sanctioned tent city in the United States. Tent cities have also cropped up in St. Petersburg, Florida, Seattle and Olympia, Washington, as well as many other American cities. Encampments on public property usually get shut down pretty quickly. Others, like the one in King County, Washington, have lasted for years by getting permission to stay on church-owned land. Dignity Village started out as an illegal tent city underneath the bridges of Portland, Oregon, in late 2000, early 2001. When the cops came and gave the group of homeless activists 24 hours notice to disperse or be dispersed, the group simply moved their camp to another part of the city. This went on for about a year until the city of Portland finally decided to sit down with the homeless activists and figure out a plan. The activists were allowed to set up an encampment for 60 people on the city-owned Sutherland recycling facility. 6 years later, Dignity Village is on a bigger spot on the Sunderland site, and they signed a lease with the city this past spring that will ensure their space there until 2010. Just before their move to the new lot, Julie Sabatier spent a couple of days at the village, talking to the residents and hearing their stories about how they got there, what makes them want to stay or leave, and whether or not they think the village model is sustainable.
Why do people talk all proper in front of a microphone?
I don't know.
It's funny.
I mean, everybody's voices just changed, but yeah.
This is Denise Muhammad.
Oh, Denise Muhammad. Scoot off.
She and her boyfriend, Greg, came to Dignity Village in October 2006.
We were both pretty burnt out on California. The job market down there is really slim. So I came down here and gave it a try. At first, I didn't like it because it kept raining, but then it grew on me. And I decided to give it a shot to stay out here a couple of years and try to get on my feet, get a job again, and maybe go back to school, like I said. We were staying at Beaverton Budget Inn Hotel. We was paying $1,300 a month. Between me getting paid $175 a week and him getting paid like $600 every 2 weeks, the whole checks, both of our checks went exclusively to that motel, so we couldn't save money to move into an apartment, because if we would have known about Dignity Village, we could have stayed here, worked, and came up and went and got us an apartment. But instead, we did it backwards. But if you don't know, you don't know. But anyway, we stayed there for about 4 months. I lost my job. He got laid off. TPI couldn't help us, so I got this phone number. On the 29th, I called them. We slept all night on the bus bench, and on the 30th, we came out here. Man, I mean, it was this one night being homeless for real. Out on the streets, I was like, oh, God, please, Lord, let them have some room here. And they did. They let us come in, and we've been here since October 30th. And, you know, it's given us a chance to, like, you know, reflect on the mistakes we made and, you know, try to, you know, do better and better ourselves and, like, looking for jobs. Maybe, you know, eventually we save up enough money, we can get an apartment, get a car, and go back out there in the normal world.
Everybody's story about how they got to Dignity Village is different. They all talk about lacking options, falling through the cracks. Every one of them has had to sleep under a bridge or in a public park at some point. All of them tell me Dignity Village is a welcome change from the overcrowded shelter system. Dignity Village can house 60 people in their 10 by 12 foot structures. The accommodations vary from tents on platforms with the added privacy of blue tarp roofs and walls, to small houses with windows and doors made out of cob or scrap materials. Everyone starts out sleeping on one of the couches in the common area, or on the bus that serves as a secondary meeting space.
I come from the south, southeast Portland. I got a little bit of an accent, but not so as you'd notice.
Laura Brown is on the Dignity Village Tents and Populations Committee. She's been there for about 3 years, and she gave me a tour.
The houses are identified with a number, just with a number, and the decks are numbered with a D and then the number for D for deck.
So all these D ones are in progress. They're being...
They're decks with a tent and a tarp surrounding. The tarp surroundings are to protect against the rain and the wind. But there's usually a tent inside. Some people opt to not. If they're dry enough, they opt to not have a tent inside for more space. But most of them have a tent on the inside of them.
But there are people living in them.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Some of them have two people living in them. The problem with this one is a rat problem. We just condemned this a week ago, which is too bad because it's one of the cutest, one of the first ones you see when you come in the village. But it's a problem because what has happened is rats have burrowed in, and because of the straw walls, they've made tunnels in there. And these people were in their house trying to sleep at night, and the rats would be going through the tunnels and coming out into their place and eating their food and getting into the things and knocking over their garbage, and they're sitting there chattering their teeth, scared to move, you know, because these rats are running around their room. I'll show you over here where they burrowed from the inside, the tunnels on the inside, right out.
So there's no one living in this house
right now? No, we just condemned it. And we're going to take the straw bales out, and we're going to still use it, but it's going to be restructured into a house with plywood. Look right here, this is where they burrowed out, and if you look in there, you can see the tunnels.
Ew!
And the tunnels run all through here, all clear up the top, all four walls, and they've actually burrowed out right here so they can jump out.
Well, I guess you got to give them credit for ingenuity.
See, this is what the rats do. The straw down here is pushed out from the rats on the inside.
Gross.
Very gross. And then we have the houses like Gay's and Tim's. That Gay's over here was made. This was siding on a house. It was all painted. They just turned it around and put the backside. The painted side's on the inside. The backside's facing out. And so it looks very rustic and very cute. It's very sturdy. And so they're all insulated. All these little houses, although they're only 10 by 12 or 10 by 15, they're little like single room occupancies. You know, if you lived in a single room occupancy downtown, you would have your room and you would go down the hall to the bathroom or down the hall to the shower. That's what you do here. In here, it's just one room. You have your little kitchen in there, your propane stove, your 12 volt car battery gives you your lights and your TV and your radio. Your propane gives you lights, cooking, heat, fan in the summer, whatever. But there's just little one-room places. But they have real walls, they have real insulation, they have real windows, they have real doors, they have real roofs. You know, nothing wrong with that. They want to know if you're single.
No.
No? You realize you're in a camp full of men. Quarter or third women, but the majority's men, just like downtown.
Homelessness is difficult to measure. According to the National Law Center on Homelessness and Poverty, there are approximately 3.5 million homeless people in the United States, and single women make up about 17% of the homeless population. The Bureau of Housing and Community Development estimates there are over 3,500 homeless people in Portland. About one in four of those counted are women. There is a severe shortage of shelter beds and other resources for people experiencing homelessness, but the lack of resources for women is much more pronounced. Here's Dignity Village resident Gay Rees.
I think here, anyway, you've got an awful lot of women who, no matter how many bras we burned, the fact of the matter is that most of us have been married and most of us followed our husbands. And a lot of the women that are on the streets are because they did that. On the streets, probably 10% of homeless are women. Here, there's over 10% are here. And basically, that was a concern in the very beginning, that couples could stay together instead of separating families, and that women would have a place. Women are usually raped within 3 months of the time they become homeless, and violently abused and raped within six.
The village sits on an asphalt lot on the Sunderland Recycling Facility in North Portland. It's at the end of the number 10 bus line between the Coffee Creek Correctional Facility and Swartz Moving and Storage. Airplanes can be heard overhead at almost any time of the day. The village sits next to the composting facility, where long windrows of decomposing leaves are stacked and turned daily. On the other side of the village is the berm, a strip of land with grass and trees that serves as a buffer between the recycling facility and the road. Jill Jacobson is program manager at Sunderland.
There is seasonality in composting, especially in our operation. Mm-hmm. Our leaf season's late October to early January, and the leaves are finished composting about June, depending on the weather. Mm-hmm. There are times when the facility isn't full of leaves. And so it's my understanding, because that space was available, powers that be thought that this would be a good place to put Dignity Village.
Though they're grateful to have the space, most residents will tell you that the Sunderland site is less than ideal. Here's Gay Rees.
Out here, it's been particularly hard because this asphalt in the summertime bubbles. It gets so hot. And now they're taking our only trees away from us, so we're really going to be in trouble this summer. All of the empty parks in this town that they own, this is the only place that they could put us without somebody threatening their political career. It's that simple.
I'm Julie Sabatier, and you're listening to a Free Speech Radio News documentary about an alternative housing project in Portland, Oregon, known as Dignity Village. Homeless advocates in Portland will tell you that Dignity Village serves a specific sector of the homeless population, those who guard their independence fiercely and who are capable of organizing themselves. Some wonder if Dignity Village is really an answer to homelessness. One of the caveats of the lease with the city is that the village has to show that residents are moving on to other more permanent housing.
And my brain is so tired.
Aaron Smith is 19 years old, and he came to the village from Homer, Alaska, earlier this year. He says Dignity Village can sometimes trap residents who are not motivated to leave.
It all depends on the person. There are a type of people that will get stuck there. They're the same people who would spend their lives stuck on the streets. And I think choosing between those, this is probably a better thing for them, both for themselves and the community at large. For those who really do want to make something for themselves, this provides a step up that did not exist before. There will still be people who simply just want to sit back and have everything taken care of for them. But sadly, that is something that promotes. And if you don't mind everything else going around here, the lack of proper hygiene facilities, if you're willing to put up with that, there's really no motivation to move on.
At a meeting I attended, Aaron was on the ballot to become a member of the village, but he didn't get enough votes. Residents of the village become eligible for membership after 30 days. It's a complex structure with a board and a council, but many decisions are made at the membership level. Most of the day-to-day business of running the nonprofit that is Dignity Village are made by the board and the council. When new people come to Dignity Village, they have an intake meeting with the Tents and Populations Committee. Even though I was just an overnight guest, the committee did an intake meeting with me on the bus to go over the basic rules and the structure of the village.
Julie, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay. J-U-L-I-E.
Okay, so before we go along too much, I'm just going to give you a little rundown here. My name's Tom. I'm the chairman of Tents and Population. This is Dean. He is the secretary of the corporation here, and he is doing our minutes today for TMP. This is Laura. She's our liaison for Tents and Population. What we usually do with guests is
they come in on guest status. They move from guest status in 30 days. After being a guest, they can become a resident. After 30 days as a resident, they become a member. When you first come in on guest status, you are put either on the bus or in the common area, wherever there's room, and you are not allowed to go back in the residences without a member in good standing with you, because that's our homes, and you're allowed to be in the common area while you're asleep or the bus. You've got the porta potties, you've got the telephone and the computers and the internet and email, all that up here. You've got the shower up here. So being a guest on guest status is a probationary period until we get to know you.
Shower.
Yeah, until we get to know you, and so we need to stay from up here.
I'm going to go ahead and give you the five basic rules. There's no drinking or drugs on site or within a one block radius. There's no constant disruptive behavior. Everyone must contribute to the maintenance of the village 10 hours per week, unless you're going to school or working full-time or part-time. You get less hours. No theft to yourself or others, and no violence to yourself or others here.
There's nobody under 18 allowed here because we're under construction and because there may be people with criminal histories here.
On the first and third Tuesday of every month, we have a membership meeting at 6 o'clock. And all the guests are supposed to be at those meetings unless they are work takes priority or school does. But you must be at those meetings during the duration of being a guest. There's also council meetings every Wednesday at 6 o'clock that the guests are supposed to be at, just so they get a feel of what we're about here at the village. It's very important that you write your hours down. You turn them in every Sunday or Monday by noon. With the guests, we try to have them turned in by Sunday. Yeah,
and that's hours
are very, very important. If you do not turn them in, then you're not contributing to the village, and we'll ask you to leave at that time or whatever. We usually give people a couple chances here and there. Yeah, we try to help each other out here. If you need anything, just please let one of us know, and we'll do what we can to help you.
So, Julie, are you going to be comfortable sleeping on? Do you have enough bedding? Do you need some bedding?
I have a sleeping bag and a pillow, so okay. I should be all right.
The warmest place probably for you is in the common area because they keep the wood stove pretty much going all night,
okay,
rather than up here on the bus because it's freezing up here.
Okay.
And there's couches. There's only one person sleeping in there right now, and security is 24 hours a day here. We do shifts, the whole village, and 24 hours a day, people will be coming through and making sure everything's cool. And so you'll be perfectly safe in there if you're okay with that.
Yep.
Is that about the end of the meeting, you guys?
How much will we adjourn?
Okay.
I second it.
He seconded it.
I spent most of my time in the common area, sitting on the couch, listening to people tell me their stories. A wood stove provided heat, and a skylight most of the light, though there is also enough electricity to have a television on a few hours a day. People came in and out, but there was usually at least one person cooking, reading, striking up a conversation, or just breezing through the common area. Flies swam in the sunlit cigarette haze hanging in the air around us, as Gay told me how she first came to Dignity Village. How long have you been here?
It'll be 6 years in June.
So almost the whole time. And where were you before you came here?
I was housed. I was going through some real bad health problems, and I was off work more than I was on. And plus, I saw some things going on in corporate office that just, to me, was an abomination, the way people were treated. And
where were you working?
I'm not going to tell you.
Fair enough.
And I walked off the job. And for the first time in my life, I forgot I wasn't 25. I forgot I didn't weigh 125 pounds. And I forgot I was in a wheelchair. And I went, it was about 8 months. And then finally, there just was no more money. And I was evicted. And I was out on the street. At the time, they had a rapist loose in Southeast. So I was terrified when I was out on the street. I went to the only place that I knew about that seniors could get help, and that didn't happen. To me, the system failed me. So I came out of there, I was so angry, and I went flying downtown. I was in the wheelchair at the time. And I literally bumped into a police officer, and I asked him, I didn't even know the name of it, I just said, you know that tent city that they're, I said, do you know where they are? And he said, well, they're under one of the bridges. And I said, do you know which one? And he said, I'll call in. So he called dispatch, and dispatch told him the Fremont. And that's how I wound up at the village. And there was no room at the time, but they made room. I had nothing. I didn't even have a blanket. They just welcomed me with open arms and did everything they could to make it, because they know it's a shock. And I'm from middle class America. Things like this don't happen to me.
And so have you had an opportunity to move out of Dignity Village, or is that a priority for you?
It's not a priority for me. I have made the commitment to stay here and do whatever the village would allow me to do to help them get off the ground and stay off the ground. I believe that in the wealthiest country in the world, it is shameful that anybody sleeps behind a dumpster or in a doorway or under a bush. And then anybody goes to bed with their dinner was Twinkies, because that's what was available. I find that absolutely appalling.
So is this kind of a form of activism for you?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And have you had an opportunity to leave? Or do you have options elsewhere? So you're choosing to stay here then?
Yes.
But aren't you taking up space from somebody who maybe doesn't have that choice?
No. No. You have to have a core group that holds things together and continuity. And oftentimes, in some of the people in that have stepped up for a little while, they'll come to me and they'll say, well, what was your intent here? Because I helped to write the bylaws.
Just then, someone came up and offered me a hostess dessert for about the 15th time since I'd come to the village.
Your initiation, you must eat.
Do you have any more of those snowballs?
And I'm putting this right on no, tape. She's not a real dignidiot because she's not existing on snowballs.
Why?
She's now become a dignidiot. She's going to crunch.
Can somebody explain to you why this place is what they know about this?
So now that my mouth is full of snowball here, I wanted to ask about the hostess cakes.
Okay.
So those come, do you want me to ask you?
Twice a week.
Okay. So those come twice a week.
We have a very generous, sweet, little old guy. He's my boyfriend in my second life, I told him.
This is Laura Brown.
Look at me. I didn't look like this when I came in here 3 years ago, but I do now. And if you stay very long, you will too. He comes in about twice a week with a carload, anywhere from 5 to 9 shopping carts full of every kind of hostess boxes of them. Every kind of hostess you can imagine.
Well, it's just about the least healthy thing you could eat, isn't it?
It's our mainstay. The thing our diets probably lack the most. We have another guy that brings us in breads. We have people that bring in breads. We have people that bring in fruits and vegetables and the hostess. But our diets are lacking right now in dairy products and in meats.
Copious hostess donations is just one example of the strange relationship the village has with the outside world.
Which brings me to my main gripe is poverty on parade.
What do you mean by poverty on parade?
Well, I have visions in the summertime particularly, especially the weekends. People are going through here constantly, tours. You know, if I went into your neighborhood and did that, you would have me thrown in jail. But, and I understand why. You know, this is an oddity. It's, you know, and we kind of live with that. But on the other hand, I have these visions of people on a Sunday morning saying, well, kids, you want to go to the zoo today or you want to go look at the poor people?
And as far as the poverty on parade thing, I'm kind of torn with that because I feel the same way. I like to have not somebody sticking a camera in my face or when I'm sitting there trying to eat my dinner or, you know, my own time, my own agenda for the day. But then on the other hand, Dignity Village is a unique thing, and I understand the public's interest, and it's because of the public's interest and the public support that we've been able to exist. So, you know, I tolerate that, and I'm friendly and helpful because we want people to be interested. We want people to come out and see, not only because we want to continue to exist, but we hope that there will be lots of Dignity Villages.
As the only government-sanctioned tent city in the country, Dignity Village has tried to make their model accessible to people in other cities. With the help of Kwamba Productions, the residents created the Tent City Toolkit, an interactive DVD with input from residents and city officials who helped to get the village off the ground. Earlier this year, some village residents made a trip up to Olympia, Washington, to advise some people trying to start a tent city up there. One of the people who has helped Dignity Village to be successful is Lee Larson. He's contributed the most private funds and resources to the village and helped them grow since they started out under the bridges in downtown Portland.
You know, I'm a supporter of Dignity Village. I'm a wealthy guy, so I have money and some resources and ideas, and I like to, you know, share with others. So that's kind of my situation. And we're no big deal. We're not Bill Gates, but we just try to do small things.
And how much money would you say you've given to support Dignity Village?
I don't know, several hundred thousand, directly or indirectly. You know, and I don't think it's when you support Dignity Village, it's a charity. It's they're doing it, and all you're doing is just, I don't know, holding hands a little bit. I've been to homeless villages in Japan and New Delhi and southern India, Tamil Nadu. I've been to in Egypt. And in Africa, I've seen the shanty towns, plus in the U.S. And I think the model of Dignity Village, and, you know, it's not totally unique. You had Dome Village in L.A., but so you have similarities. But for the most part, Dignity Village and the model has been, they're a pioneer group. And what they've modeled is replicatable all over the world and all over the U.S. And it's really admirable. It's people raising themselves up from their own bootstraps. And it's not dependent on charity. It's dependent on their vision and energy and working with one another. And I think it's an example not only for homeless people, but it's an example for communities all over the world that, you know, we're enough. We can do it.
But they really couldn't do it without your help, though.
I don't know that I would agree with that. I think they have it all, and they're enough.
Raggedy as we are, we're doing the best we can.
Denise Muhammad.
Overall, it's a good place to be because they do give you an opportunity to get on your feet, to get your head clear, to get a meal in your stomach, you know, because it really means a lot. When you're out there in the streets, little things mean a lot, like being able to take a bath, being able to use the telephone and call your relatives and let them know whether you're alive or what's going on with you. Being able to get on that computer. They feed you. They donate clothes to you. I mean, it's almost like having mom, but except this 57 strangers. But, yeah, you know, I love it, but sometimes they do get on my nerves. What gets on my nerves is like, please, y'all grown, wash the dishes. You are very fortunate to come here and be able to stay here and get your stuff together. You know, I mean, I have my mood swings with it, you know. Sometimes, like I said, they do get on my nerves at times, but overall, I would rather be here than anywhere else right now. I'd really rather be here than be standing at my mother's house because I don't want to hear the, you know, the nitpicking and stuff like this. Right here, I can, you know, have a place where I can think or, you know, just have a peace of mind. There's a lot of talented people here, really, really smart people here. I don't know how Dignity Village is going to turn out. I hope it turns out good. I hope it ends up staying forever. You know, I hope a lot more pop up.
To find out more about Dignity Village, visit them on the web at myspace.com/dignityvillage. That is myspace.com/dignityvillage. You can read up on their latest news, make a donation, look at photos, and learn more about the village's history. Julie Sabatier recorded the material for this documentary and produced it with help from Brian Kramer and Levi Cecil. Jason Leonard composed the music. It was adapted from an episode of DIY Portland, a monthly show about revolutionary do-it-yourself projects. Find out more at destinationdiy.org. That is destinationdiy.org. You've been listening to a Free Speech Radio News documentary about Dignity Village. You can listen to this and other Free Speech Radio News documentaries again at fsrn.org. That is fsrn.org. Producer of this documentary is Julie Sabatier. Editor, Tana Guse. For the Free Speech Radio News production team, I am Antonio Ortiz.